He'll look to see if his man was still there. The danger of being compromised in a tavern this large would be minimal. It sounded as if there were dozens inside, and the gray man knew how to melt into his surroundings indoors as well as outdoors. He headed back to the front door, tucked his neck deep into his denim jacket to make himself an inch shorter, and then pushed open the front door of the Podrick Purse. Gentry entered the pub and immediately knew he'd made a grave mistake. It was incredibly small. The pool area he'd heard from the back was shut off with an access door against the back wall of the tavern with a large sign that read, "Members Only." The room Court had entered contained just a small bar, three tables, and a few snugs along the wall. He strolled to the bar and took a stool. Did not turn his head left or right, just pulled out his wallet and stared straight ahead at the bottles behind the bar. He felt the eyes of the dozen or so patrons, but he did not yet know if Slattery was in the room with him. There was a hard edge to the pub and its clientele. Court sensed it immediately. Malevolence filled the air. This was no place for strangers. Finally, he glanced up into the mirror behind the bar. Every man in the pub, Dougal Slattery and the two young mates seated with him included, stared at him through the glass. Tough crowd, Gentry thought. A sign taped to the mirror caught his eye. No singing allowed. Tough joint. Shit. The bartender eyed him for a long moment over his newspaper, finally laid it down, and raised his red brows slightly. "Pint of Guinness," Court said. Slattery sipped his beer, listened to the two young blokes in his snug complain about a bad call in the rugby match the previous evening between Clontarf and Thoman. Dougal was a Wanderer supporter himself, couldn't give two shits about how bleedin' Clontarf had been bleedin' robbed by the bleedin' referee, but he enjoyed the company of the two young regulars nonetheless. He looked up when he heard the door open. It was late for anyone to come in for a pint, but certainly not unheard of. He cocked his head to the side. His eyes tracked the stranger as he headed to the bar. Dougal quickly tuned out his tablemates. Inside Dougal Slattery's large frame, alarm bells clanged as loud as those in the belfry of the Christ Church Cathedral a mile to the west. A stranger in the Podrick Purse was a queer enough sight, but this bloke had been in the crowd at the Oliver earlier in the evening. Moreover, he was young and fit, and just one shade too nonchalant for Slattery's taste. He wasn't local. He dressed the part, true, but Slattery saw through it somehow. As the man sat himself on a bar stool, the Irishman looked hard for evidence of a weapon in his clothing, either the printing of a handgun or that particular hitch a man with a sidearm must make to accommodate the iron on his hip as he sits. Dougal saw nothing, but the stranger's right side was shielded from him. He heard the man order, "Pint of Guinness." Nothing foreign or odd there. He even sounded a bit Irish, but his voice was low and soft. Was he police? Interpol? Dougal knew that cops in a half dozen countries would like to put him in shackles and drag him off his blessed island. No, this man did not appear to be a cop. He seemed somehow too relaxed for that line of work. He also knew how to order a Guinness, and that was something. Uninitiated foreigners tended to reach for the glass as soon as it's placed on the bar, a cardinal mistake. The stout requires a two-part pour. The bartender allows the foam to settle for a couple of minutes, at which time the beer sits teasingly close to the patron, inviting him to show his ignorance by pulling the glass to himself. But this stranger knew his manners. Slattery caught a glance from the man through the mirror, just a quick, impassive, fleeting look. The other regulars in the bar were all staring at the stranger as well. He looked them over before returning his attention to the bartender. George wasn't any happier to see a stranger at his bar than was Slattery, but he served the pint and took the money and went back to his newspaper. Dougal leaned forward to the men at his table. He spoke to them softly. There was an affectation of levity, but the words were said with no smile at all.
"Listen, laddies, how would you fancy a little action tonight before your ma's tuck yous into your beds?"
Court had been made, and he knew it. He sat at the bar, stared into his beer, his body feigning relaxation but his mind tense, going over the protocol for dealing with a dozen men in a room not much larger than the interior of a school bus. There would be blades in this crowd, Gentry had no doubt. Brass knuckles, too, more than likely. Maybe even a sawed-off double-barreled shotgun behind the bar. Court wore a pistol in a holster in his waistband, but it wasn't much of a defensive weapon. A Russian Makarov. With the silencer in his coat pocket, he could make it an effective assassin's tool, but the .380 caliber bullet was too impotent to count on as an effective man-stopper. The 8-round magazine capacity seemed woefully inadequate for the mass of beef around him in the room, and the magazine release mechanism was poorly placed and inefficient. Yes, Court knew he could poke bloody holes in a few of these mix if it came down to it, but if they moved on him in force and with motivation, he'd be good and well fucked. He took a chug of his Guinness. Never had a pint look so large. He thought he'd never drain down to the bottom of his glass so he could head out and get back to the dark street. Behind him, he heard Slattery whisper something to the men with him. Court did not look up into the mirror. Slattery had seen him earlier at the Oliver St. John Gogarty. That was clear enough. Now he'd be letting his friends in on the situation. With good luck, Slattery would bug out, set up some sort of confrontation in the street, send his men outside to hide in the dark and leave with them. With bad luck, it would go down here and now. Dougal would stand and proclaim to the room that the man who pitched the stranger through the front window would earn himself a year's supply of Guinness. Son of a bitch, Court thought. Recuperating in France, he'd really wanted to get operational again, but this was much too fucking much. Court began to stand. His pint was half full, but he thought if he could leave this pub under his own power at any time, it would be right now, before Slattery got his plan together. But before Gentry could slide all the way off his stool, the bartender lowered his newspaper.
Don't fancy your pint, eh?
The red-headed, barrel-chested 60-year-old man must have sensed the bad juju in the room between Slattery and the stranger. Court didn't want to say too much. Instead, he shifted on his stool, like he was just rearranging himself, and lifted his glass. Tipped it to the bartender and took another gulp.
It's just grand, he said.
He thought he sounded Irish, but wasn't sure. To his left, the two men in the booth with his target stood and left through the front door. Two more at the table behind him stood. Court tracked them through the mirror as they approached. They sat on either side of him, menacingly. The man on the left spoke first. His breath was hot with Irish whiskey and tobacco.
Where are you from?
Court looked straight ahead. He dropped the attempt at an Irish accent.
Work in a Maersk freighter. We dock this afternoon, leave out in the morning.
Where are you from?
The other man repeated his mate's question.
I told you.
You born on the freighter? Where you from means where you come from.
Lads, leave the man to enjoy his pint in peace.
It was Dougal Slattery speaking. He had stood, strolled over to the bar with his limp, and made eye contact through the mirror.
Always good to see a new face here, travelers included. Don't pay the lads any attention, friend.
Court wondered why it was that everyone was calling him friend today. Chapter 3 5 minutes later, Gentry left the Podrick purse. Slattery had gone first, just after rescuing the stranger from the two locals, who had returned to their table without another word. The bartender had not looked up from his paper through it all. Court walked east on Purse Street, moving deftly in the shadows 100 yards behind the limping man with the drum on his shoulder. Everything had changed now. The entire operation had been accelerated by Court's decision to walk through the front door of the pub. He could not just do a soft recon as he'd originally planned. No, his target was spooked, and his target would run or build up his defenses. It did not take a brilliant tradecraft mind to thwart an imminent attack from one man. Run away or circle the wagons and pass out the guns. It was page 1 from the How to Avoid Assassination manual, and Gentry had no doubt Dougal had read it. If the gray man was going to complete his contract, he knew he'd have to do it tonight. Slattery turned right into the open front gates of a drab block of flats and did not look back as he began climbing up a slanting car park towards a door. Court moved on through the darkness, closer to his prey. A prey that would be expecting him, yes, but hopefully not quite so soon. A thick young man in a black rugby shirt stepped into the street from his hiding place behind a large waste bin, 25 feet in front of Court. Gentry slowed, stopped, faced the man, his hands down at his sides. It was one of the young men who'd been with Slattery in the Podrick purse. The Irishman exposed a long length of chain from behind his leg, began swaying it slowly like a pendulum.
"What the fuck you doing following me, mate?"
His brogue was almost incomprehensible, but it hardly mattered. Court was not listening. Instead, all his attention was focused on softer noises, tuned to hear the footsteps that would be approaching from behind any second. This rugby boy's buddy was out there somewhere, and he'd make his move from the rear, Court had no doubt. He might go for a headlock, or, more likely, swing a chain or a piece of metal at his target's exposed back. Normally, as an elite contract killer, Court dealt with more determined foes with better training and equipment. But in cover working in dockyards or hanging in seedy bars in scummy parts of shitty towns, he'd seen beatings and batterings by thick-headed ruffians often enough to memorize the standard operating procedure. It didn't matter where you were, really. There was something of a universal language to an ass-kicking. The man in the black rugby shirt shouted something else, this time fully indecipherable, and then there it was. Soft footsteps, getting louder and quicker behind him as they closed in. Court made himself look straight ahead at black shirt rugby boy and pretended to have no idea he was about to be jumped from behind until the last possible moment. The steps were on him now, and Court moved like lightning, executing his first force-on-force encounter in months. In one motion, he sank low and spun and moved to the side, saw a bald young man in an orange rugby shirt move in a blur and swing a length of bent rebar at the empty space where Gentry's back had been 3/4 of a second before. The weight of the iron and the swing itself, as well as the Irishman's own momentum, carried him through the space, and he kept moving forward long after his mind had registered that his target had avoided his strike. Court stood quickly as the man passed by him, used his left hand to guide the flying man past him, shot a clenched fist through the black knight like a firing piston, connected perfectly with the area just under the man's right ear, cracking the jaw and snapping the head to the side and rendering the man unconscious, even as his out-of-control energy propelled him onwards. The rebar clanged in the street and the Irishman followed, fell chest first and rolled, all arms and legs flapping, to a stop at the foot of his mate. He did not move. Blood on his face from the road rash acquired when his skin met the asphalt glistened in the cobalt street lamps. Black rugby shirt swung his chain wildly now, his eyes dropping to check on his friend and then darting back up with equal measures of fury and terror to the bearded man in front of him. Court walked towards the man, arms low, eyes and shoulders relaxed. A man in his element. The chain whipped forward. The gray man stepped into the path of the chain, caught it deftly with his left hand, and yanked hard, knocking the young man in the rugby shirt off balance, bringing him closer with a jolt. A right-hand spear to the throat knocked the Irishman to his back. He rolled in the street, gagged and wheezed, choking on his bruised and swelling airway as he stared at the bearded man who now squatted above him. When he spoke, the American sounded calm, in complete control, as if he were the one who had planned this ambush in the dark. "Slattery's flat number, please. I will only ask you once." 4 minutes later, the tip of the handgun silencer pushed open the unlatched door of flat 66 of the Queen's Court condominiums. Behind the silencer was a Russian Baikal Makarov automatic pistol. Behind the Mac was the gray man. All senses were alert, more so because the door had been left open invitingly, and that was odd, considering the fact that the man who lived there was surely aware that someone was coming for him. As Gentry entered the well-lit living room behind the door, he did not have long to wonder about the location of his target. Slattery sat at a simple wooden table in the middle of the small room, facing the door, a bottle of Irish whiskey and 3 shot glasses in front of him. Court noticed that the man had changed shirts. He now wore a blue-on-black rugby jersey, open loose at the collar and straining tight around his thick midsection, perhaps his favorite team. Slattery looked up at him for a long time. He took one of the shot glasses and turned it upside down. He had been expecting 2 guests, no doubt the 2 left lying in the street. Dougal recovered, lifted a 2nd glass slowly.
"Care for a drink, lad?"
He was nervous, clearly. His low voice cracked. Court scanned the room quickly. His weapon remained pointed at his target's forehead as he did so. He spoke softly but with calm conviction.
"Hands where I can see them."
Slattery complied.
"Did you kill him?"
"The rugby boys? No. They'll be okay." He added, "Eventually." Slattery nodded, shrugged.
"Like a knife through butter, was it?"
"Not much trouble, no."
"They'd have been no match if they weren't pissed. Have a seat first, will you? I have some grand whiskey here."
Court continued searching the room for threats, all senses alert. His target seemed oddly resigned to what was going on, but that could have been some sort of deception. "No." The big man shrugged again.
"Then maybe you'll let me have a drink first."
He didn't wait. He poured Old Bushmills into a shot glass, tossed it back into his open throat, placed the glass back in front of him, and refilled it. Court moved to the window. He flipped the overhead off on the way. Shrouded in darkness now, he looked down into a street. Slattery said,
"There's no one coming. Just the 2 you met already. Even if they can still walk, they won't be walking this way, I promise you that."
Court checked the bedroom, the bathroom, the kitchen. They were alone. The Irishman just sat at the table facing the doorway. He shot another whiskey, refilled the glass again, waiting patiently. When Gentry stepped back in front of him, Slattery put his hand around the bottle, tipped it towards his guest. He said,
"Sure you won't have a wee drop. I always found it helpful back when I was on the job."
Court shook his head, focused fully on his target. His Makarov rose. Dougal Slattery spoke quickly.
"Look, pal, I know you gotta do it. No argument from me. I was on the job once, and I know the score. There's just one thing. A little favor. I got a kid. Not a kid. He's about 30 now, I guess. He's in Galway."
"Do I look like I give a shit?"
"He's got the Down syndrome. Good boy. But he can't look after himself. No, ma. She was an old whore in Belfast, OD'd 20-some-odd years back. I've got him in private care. I'm all the boy has."
"I could not possibly care less."
"I'm just saying. I send money enough to keep him out of state care."
Court pulled the Max hammer back with his thumb. Dougal kept talking faster.
"Without the money, he'll go to state care. It's a feckin' mess, believe me. Me boy is my punishment for me life. You can have me fucking life, mate, but don't make him pay for it."
It occurred to Court that he should have just put a bullet through the man's head when he walked through the door.
"Everyone leaves someone behind. I can't help you." "No, you can't help me, but you can help him. I'm asking for 24 hours, one bleeding day, and I'll knock over a bank or a currency exchange or something. There's an armored car that makes stops up and down Dawson Street in the afternoons. A lot of options for a quick job. If I just had time for a score, I could get some money to the home so he'll be set. If I had any idea you were coming for me, I'd have done it already. But this is a bit of a surprise. I've been off the job for a long time. I thought I was out of it. Look, I won't run. I'll send the home in Galway 100% by wire tomorrow afternoon, and then I'll come back here, and you can drop me dead. I swear on me ma's grave. You'll get your payday for me, scalp, and I'll get me boy the money he needs so he can be looked after when I'm gone. I'm sitting here now showing you respect, showing you that I'm not a runner. I'm not a fighter. Not anymore.
I'm sitting here, handing myself over to you, hoping you'll do the right thing and give me one bleeding day to sort out some decent future for me, lad.
The man was near tears, desperate. Cort had no doubt the story was true. Still, he steeled himself. He raised the weapon to eye level. Sorry, dude. That's not going to happen. Slattery's eyes began to water before he tossed down another shot. He did not refill the glass afterwards this time.
I figured you for a man with a soul. My mistake. So, it's off to State Care for me, lad.
He smiled a little.
All's not lost, though. There is some wee consolation. I know someday Sid will set some bloke after you.
Cort lowered the pistol slightly.
Sid? You're Sid's new lad, yeah? I'm Sid's old lad. So you see your future before your eyes, don't you? He sent you on this wee errand to make room for yourself in his organization. This is your audition to replace me, you know.
When Cort did not speak for